Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey everybody, this is Phil Town.
And this is Danielle Town.
Welcome to the Invested Podcast.
Indeed.
Where I am one eye in it today.
Oh man.
On our podcast, I feel
the
like
the story I'm, of our woes continues. No, but seriously.
My shoulder turned into an eye.
Yeah. But you do have two eyes still, thank goodness.
Yeah.
Just eye surgery is putting you a bit on the what is it? Unifocal?
Unit?
That's
unit,
not right.
Omni? Uni? I got one eye. That's what I've got. And it's in 2 weeks, I'll have two eyes. So it'll be all good.
It's healing.
Yeah.
It's been
entertaining, Danielle, as I came out of surgery for this glaucoma thing. You know, they put a stent in and it bled. I got to be the one in 1,000. It bled in there, caused a big, huge clot. They had to go back in, sans anesthesia, take the clot out. It really was not pleasant.
Freaking tough guy over here, by the way.
That was nasty. And then it was like knife wounds in the eyeball for half an hour. And then
well, so the answer to the question, why on earth would you ever do that? Because of course that's what I said, is that the doctor just thought it would take like very, very quick.
Thought it'd be quick.
In and out.
Yeah. Lesson learned. Yeah.
And then it ends up taking an incredibly long time, which, oh my gosh. So if anybody wants to stick a knife in anybody's eye, tell them to go take 20 minutes and go get the anesthetic drops.
Do that.
Yeah.
Do that. The little stick in the hand is
way better. You know, when I had eye surgery, however many years ago at this point, I also had all these complications and it took so much longer to heal than they told me it would. Eye surgery is just, maybe it's just us, I don't know, but it can be a real mess. And it's not the kind of thing you can really work around too well when you can't see. So it's not like a botched ankle or something. So it's really a big thing.
Yeah.
Or a botched collarbone, you know, as the case may be.
Well, I'm taking painkillers for the eye, the shoulder pain
is feeling good.
It's like, yeah, hey, this is great.
You know, when I was little and people, like, I learned that like Tylenol or paracetamol or, you know, like over-the-counter painkillers existed, ibuprofen. And I was always like, how does it know where to go in the body to alleviate the pain? Like it made no sense to me that you would take the same medicine for like a hurting back as you would take for a hurting eye, because how could that medicine possibly know which of those places to go to? And I would ask people, I don't know if I ever asked you, but I definitely asked people and they just sort of looked at me like I was crazy. And nobody ever explained to me that it goes all over your whole body for like a long time until I finally figured it out. I think I was a teenager before I sort of discovered that.
I probably said something like, oh, it's just really smart.
Probably.
Yeah. Wanting you to have
that's
great
the kind
faith
of thing
in
you
the
would
drug.
Say. Yeah.
Yeah, would be.
Yeah.
Having, as a parent, always having the answer. And your child grows up thinking, my parents are crazy. Oh, man.
I was just listening the other day to, yeah, I know we should talk about investing.
We should. But
I was just listening the other day to Smartless with Matthew McConaughey, which just came out. And like, I haven't even finished the episode, but the whole thing is just about like parenting, and like they're just keep talking about parenting and how do you talk to your kids about hard things. And it's sort of, as a non-parent, I'm sort of like, oh yeah, I guess that's something you have to do a lot. It's it seems like a lot of work.
Honestly, I think parenting is, they haven't figured out yet how to train people in parenting. So,
well, they have, I think. Into it. It
well,
probably
we
just
don't learn.
You don't, people don't do it.
We don't do it.
Yeah.
We don't trust anybody that's going to tell us how to do it. And then we don't do it. Then we don't know what we're doing. And then we experiment on the first child, you. And then the second one gets ignored because we're overwhelmed by the first one and the second one. It's just ridiculous.
And then you start taking folksy wisdom from actors.
Yeah, and you hope the schools will raise your children. You just, yeah, folksy wisdom from actors. Great.
So, yeah. Since, hopeless. You know, I'm learning things from you all the way.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Should we talk about penny stocks? Finally?
Let's do.
Penny stocks?
Finally. Penny stocks.
So what the heck is a penny stock? Maybe we should start there.
Well, it used to be a penny stock. Was a penny stock. That is, it sold for under a dollar. And they
so
wouldn't
sold for
let it
pennies.
Trade. Yeah, for pennies. And they wouldn't let it trade on the major exchanges because it sold for too small of an amount. And the commissions weren't based on percentages so much as they were just a certain amount per trade. And the combination meant that the really inexpensive or cheap stocks that were selling for pennies would be obliterated by the commission. So you'd end up paying as much for the commission as you would for the stock.
Oh,
so it went as to its own special kind of place, which are called pink sheets.
I hadn't thought about it from the perspective of practical who gets paid. So they were separate. That actually makes a lot of sense. They were separated out because the commission to deal with the trade wasn't even worth the time or the energy to do the actual trade.
Well, it wasn't worth it to the person buying the stock. It was, the commission was too high back in those days. And then as commissions became a percentage of the trade, then it was not worth it to the person doing the brokerage. It was just too small. And so a section of the industry
opened itself up. Wait, so for a while,
up.
People, like stockbrokers, were paid like a flat fee?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Here's what I charge for that. And then
for
and a great
long
period.
And then it became a percentage. Period,
then it was a percentage. Then it was not enough. And... and then the penny stock exchange opened up with brokers who were on the fringe of trying to be in the business, opened up where they couldn't compete very well with the Morgan Stanleys, the Goldman Sachs of the world that were well established. They could compete on the fringe of brokerage business with these penny stocks. And they opened up what was called the pink sheets. These were called pink sheets because the trades were done on multiple, what do you call it? You know, like the multiple pages that are printed through when you press on them. I forgot what those
are
called.
Oh, yeah. Oh, gosh. What is that called?
Yeah.
Where it's like
a white one and a yellow one and a pink one.
Yeah. So it's when you write on it with a ballpoint pen, it goes through all the copies.
Right.
Triplicate.
Right. So the brokers would keep the pink sheet. And the pink sheet would be one that would be the one that determined where that trade had gone through.
No way.
It was all done on paper.
Why was that called a pink sheet and the other one, the like larger price, higher price stocks, they didn't use that system?
They didn't use that system. They were on computers at that point in time.
Oh, so these ones were small enough that it wasn't worth. Okay, got it.
Yeah. And they were in far-flung places like Vancouver had a penny stock exchange and San Francisco had a penny stock exchange.
And how did anybody make money off of doing that, off of the transactions?
They did this bid spread thing between the brokers that were managing these.
Mm-hmm.
So that there would be a gap between what the client paid – for the stock and what the client got for the stock. So the person buying it paid a certain amount, let's say 10 cents, and the person who was selling it got 5 cents. And the broker took 5 cents.
Yeah.
So the brokers would sit in the middle and take, that would be a large one, but they would take an enormous chunk out of the middle on this bid-ask structure. So it would become just what the traffic would bear. That's all. And since the traffic had really very little idea that this sort of spread was going on, and the traffic was quite a lot of ignorant people being sold these very illiquid stocks that wouldn't trade very often, the brokers were getting away with this stuff.
Why was the traffic ignorant people?
Well,
how could people who weren't well versed in the world of stocks and companies even get access to such a, it sounds difficult to access exchange if it doesn't even have computers at this time?
Very difficult to access exchange. So here's how you get access to it. You're an attorney and you get on a list somehow.
Yeah.
And a broker calls you up cold.
Oh.
And says, have I ever got, you know, you're on this list, or you answered a card, you sent in a card from, you know, Business Magazine that you would be interested in looking at some good deals. Have I ever got a deal for you? Did you ever see Wolf of Wall Street?
No, I haven't seen it.
Oh, it's good.
Yeah, I know. It's on the list. Oh my God. By the way, this just reminded me about Netflix. I have to like issue a huge mea culpa about Netflix, because I'm sure everybody listening to me is like, Danielle, you're an idiot. You know how I complained so much about how Netflix doesn't have like a different account for me and for Nuno, and we like to watch different things? It turns out they totally have that. And it's this thing at the beginning when you open it up, it says who's logging in or something like that. And I always thought that that was just like whoever's account it was, but it turns out you can make multiple of those, whatever that is. I don't even know. And I just didn't know what that was. So sorry, Netflix, and sorry to everybody who had to listen to me complain about that over and over. I didn't know. And my wonderful brother-in-law was like, Danielle, hello. Like, you can make that. They've had that since the beginning. I was like, what? All right, aside. So Wolf of Wall Street keeps coming up in our Netflix list, and I keep on being like, ugh, it sounds really like serious and intense, and I don't feel like it.
Oh, yeah. Well,
does it involve pink sheets?
Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What are you looking up now? You're looking up something.
I'm looking
at
Wolf of Wall Street right now.
Oh.
It's hilarious. Yeah. So, yes, it involves pink sheets. So what happened was this guy named Jordan Belfort was hired by a Main Street Wall Street firm to sell stocks.
Wait, is it a true story?
Yeah.
Oh.
True story.
And so we could just end the podcast, and much like a day of substitute teachering, we could just watch the movie.
We could just put the movie on right now, and you guys.
How much could we play from the fair use exception? Oh, let's play like 30 seconds and be like, there you go, there's the movie.
That would be so great. It really would be just the first part of the movie, actually. We could probably get away with it in the next 20 minutes, where it's the movie setup, where Jordan realizes that, you know, it's just all about the money. He's trained by a trainer at, I mean, this could be a Jefferies company or a Morgan Stanley or Goldman, it doesn't say, but he's trained by his trainer that it's not about the client. It's about you, the broker, making money. It's like, we just keep them in the deals. We just keep them rolling to the next deal, to the next deal, to the next deal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and really it's just about us making money.
We make money on the transactions, not on, transactions. On anything that happens after the transaction
Don't worry
is
about
done.
That.
We could care less about
that. That's up to somebody else.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So then Belfort, I think he gets laid off in some big Wall Street layoff thing. And he is walking through a strip mall and he sees this sign for a brokerage. Just in a strip mall. So he walks in and he sees his four or five guys and they're in there trying to sell something over the phone. Mm-hmm. And Belfort's looking for a job. So he says,
wait, what time period are we in?
1980s, I think.
Okay. Thank you.
80s or 90s. And so Belfort says, he said, I'm looking for a job. And they said, we don't need anybody. And she says, let me handle this phone call. So he gets on and cold calls somebody and sells them 30,000 shares of a company he's never heard of in his life. Just hyping up this penny stock as the new next fabulous tech breakthrough that everybody's trying to get their hands on. And his firm has an allocation and you've indicated you want to roll the dice. Well, this is the dice. Right now, and you either got to go or no go. This is it. And he does this sales pitch that's really potent, and the guy buys. And everybody in this office just sits there with their jaws agape at what they just heard. They never heard anything like this guy. And so he gathers them in and ultimately ends up running this firm. And it's quite entertaining watching them learn how to do what he's doing. And gradually he builds this firm bigger and bigger and bigger until it starts to become representing some really big companies that turn out to be really big companies. Not Jimmy Choo, but another one that's prominent in the movie, a shoe company that he takes public, and it's big and it's real. But in any case, that's the sort of, as the whole movie goes along, he's making so much money. He's taking money to Switzerland in cash to get it out of the United States because they're worried about the SEC shutting them down, which they ultimately do. And they catch him moving the money and they put him in jail for a while.
And, okay. Don't tell me the end of the movie though.
Well, I've been on stage with Belfort actually.
Okay.
A series of talks I did in Canada, and Belfort got into the producer, you know, Salim, let him on stage, and he didn't do well. He's trying to sell a sales course where you can learn how to sell like that, I guess, sell anything sort of deal.
Okay.
But it's a little hard to put a lot of faith in a guy who's, you know, complete scam artist.
I don't know. Is he a complete scam artist? Is that what the movie's about? Okay. Okay, don't tell me anything else. I want to watch the movie now.
Well, Margot Robbie's in it. And
great.
Leonardo
DiCaprio.
God,
I have not seen the Barbie movie either. And that's...
I started watching that.
Gotta watch.
I couldn't watch it.
I
just couldn't watch
it. I haven't seen it, but from what I understand, you're seriously missing out.
Yeah, I couldn't watch it. I couldn't get past the intro.
Okay. I don't know what that is. So, yeah, definitely going to watch it. So, okay, we got off on this guy who they made a movie about, who you met, who seems scammy. Pink Sheets.
Right. So Jordan was selling Pink Sheet stocks. And that's how people like you might hear about one, is a boiler room, which is a name for a group of guys sitting in a room who are just pounding the phones.
Is that true? Because there's another movie called The Boiler Room.
Oh, yeah.
With Ben Affleck. Right, how many freaking movies do people make about penny stocks? Jeez. Oh,
it's good fodder. Because in order to, because nobody hears about these companies, right? And there's such a huge spread between the bid and the ask that you'd think that would be enough, but that's not enough. Guys like Belfort would
buy. It's not enough for the brokers to make money?
No.
Okay.
So what some guys would do in boiler room operations, I don't know if Jordan Belfort did this. I think they just took commissions. But what they would do in boiler room operations is they would buy the stock cheap. They would get in there and start buying it up a little bit at a time, not affecting the price. So let's say the stock is 10 cents. They would buy up a whole bunch of it at 10 cents. Then they would get on and sell it to people like, you know, a lawyer or dentist or doctor who was on somebody's list. Newest, hottest thing. And they would drive the price up with these sales coming in, and they would unload into the higher prices.
So make the market, essentially.
Yeah, they'd make a commission and become the market. And then as they got out, toward the end of their exit, the price would start coming down as people would want to then exit. The price had gone up, they'd want to exit. There's no more buyers.
And there's no, so it's a nice little Ponzi scheme, basically.
Exactly, and the price would crash. So this is the thing with penny stocks.
That is horrible.
Oh yeah, it's a really dangerous place to play. It's very lightly regulated. The SEC does regulate it, sort of. There's no real trading floor. The SEC basically is saying that they will regulate it, but they're not going to regulate it aggressively for any trade that's less than $5. And so it's basically pink sheets. Markets are very thinly regulated. I'm just looking right now to see what they say that they're doing.
So it's Wild West, essentially.
Yeah, the FBI says there's fraud confidence is widespread in the penny market. These are micro cap markets. These are really small companies.
Yeah.
A few million dollars kind of things. And it gets very difficult to cash out if nobody's a buyer.
I mean, frankly, that sounds bad, right? But like from a policy perspective, or maybe just from a practical perspective, in my opinion, the SEC already does a pretty bad job of regulating the enormous companies that it really should be all over and often isn't. And I would prefer that they put their resources into that side of the market than try to track down, well, I don't know how many there are, 1,000 tiny little itty companies that keep poor records. So that makes sense to me that they've just said, you know what, buyer beware, we're not really handling this. It's your loss or your gain.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, people lose a lot of money. The mafia got into penny stock manipulation. They think that people have lost about $2 billion a year in schemes and continue to do so. The FBI ran a sting operation on the Colombo crime family on securities fraud. So it's wide open for manipulation.
Well, because there's such low liquidity, right? So
yeah,
anybody
such low liquidity
who has the cash to buy enough to make the price move dramatically can. So I don't know how you would even change that. You wouldn't. That's just how it would work.
Yeah, no, I've done it. It's really easy to do. I found a company that made a small device you could put on a car. This is sort of pre-GPS being everywhere kind of stuff. You clip it on a car, and the company thought it would go really big on the rental car units, keeping track of their rental cars, which of course it has through other larger organizations. But this was early on, probably 20 years ago or something.
Like the TomTom or something?
Remember Doug Loniker? He and I found this thing. I think Doug found it. He said, all right, let's put a little money on this. It was 13 cents a share. And Doug and I both started buying it. We put in about $10,000 each, and drove it to 87 cents a share.
Whoa.
Before we got 20 grand into the thing.
Just the two of you.
Just the two of us. Yeah.
What was your reaction? Like, one, okay, so many questions. One, did you expect that?
No, not like that. That's 8-1.
So you thought that there were...
That was over a solid week of slowly buying. Yeah. It would get
so
the
you
new
did
floor.
Expect it to the point where you thought I better be careful and tiptoe in here.
Yeah.
Okay.
But we would buy in and then it wouldn't come down.
Uh-huh.
Because nobody was selling.
Huh.
Everybody who owned it was like, yeah, this is going to be
great.
Was
like, oh, look, somebody's buying. Like,
yeah,
we're staying in.
There must be good news on the horizon.
Yeah.
So just the...
Well, you're buying from somebody, obviously, right? But like, they want a higher and higher price.
Yeah, higher and higher price.
Wow.
And so 87 cents. And then we thought, okay, well, this has been entertaining. Let's get out.
Uh-huh.
And it continued up to $1.25 as we started to get out. So the initial removal of like...
You are the manipulative... market maker, just kind of inadvertently
and without any malintention,
right?
But now we've got this huge profit.
Jeez.
And we wanted to take it because
sure.
Now we think this thing is, it's way overpriced at this point. And so we start to
wait, more questions. Did you intend to own it for 10 years? Was it that kind of company?
No.
Or was this just a like risky, like let's
this
just sort
risky
of see
biz.
We don't really know how big this market is, how who's
we
buying,
don't know
who's
good
selling
this company is.
Let's
we
see
know
what's happening.
Good the management is, we don't know anything. This is Loniker wanting to do some trading and I followed him in.
Okay, so you were fine after a week being like, I never really
cared that much. Yeah,
got it.
So I'm not doing rule one here.
Got it.
So but I was fascinated to do it. And I was fascinated that even as we got out, it went to $1.25. So it's starting to get out, but only the initial exit. So just the first couple $1,000 and it kept going up. Because people were now engaged with it and starting to buy in.
And I bet after a week, it would start popping up on those penny stock screens of like, stocks that are,
did.
Well, if this was in the computer era. It was in the computer era, right?
Yeah.
Internet. Yeah.
Oh yeah. This is yeah. Yeah.
So that means people could see it. And yeah, I wonder if it's like, oh, it's a stock that's getting bought for some reason. Going up.
Yeah. Yeah.
What
for some
that?
Reason, right? So people are buying in
10X,
as
yeah.
we sell. But then our selling volume got too much.
Uh-huh.
And it started coming down. And it came down like a brick.
Oh my God.
Everybody was dumping. We couldn't get out at any price.
No.
We ended up getting out almost all of it at about 10 cents.
Whoa.
So we ended up
what
basically
a
breaking
roller coaster.
Even. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It was amazing. And it took a long time to get out. We really ended up getting out at 10 cents, but taking another week to 10 days to get out at that price. So there was just no market there at all. Everybody was selling, you know, it's like first everybody's saying, oh, good news is happening. And now everybody's saying, oh, bad news is happening.
Yeah.
It's just this huge roller coaster ride. So
yeah.
The lack of liquidity, the lack of information creates such huge volatility in that market that's what you have to be aware of. Plus the fact that you're going in with any kind of real money means you are a little bit the institutional investor.
Yes,
you're
exactly.
You're dealing with that same exact problem of having a lot of money you've got to get in to make sense out of this in the first place, and that creates its own problems. So if you ever want to feel like what it is like to be institutional, yeah, go buy some penny stocks and you can see it.
Well, that was my first question is like, what was your emotional reaction to that? Were you kind of like freaked out, or was it just exciting, or like what was it like a big thing, or was it just something you didn't care about? Like what was the situation week?
I had a theory going right about all this, but I was astonished honestly at how illiquid the market got as we started to exit.
Yeah.
I was absolutely astonished. I thought it would be sort of slowly going down, but it didn't slowly going down. It cratered down and gapped down big chunks at a time, you know, 20 cents, 30 cent gaps.
Wow.
Oh yeah. It was nasty. And then it would fill just a few shares and then it would just gap again. And it was really brutal trying to get out.
Do you remember how the transactions were paid at that point? Like, do you think there was a third party there sort of setting the prices, like you were saying before, or was it percentage based?
Oh no, it was spreads.
The
brokers were doing spreads.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so you end up paying this huge commission. They were eating up the commissions. The commissions were huge. That's why even though you theoretically got out at some price, you didn't get paid that price.
Mm.
You got paid a very much smaller piece of that. And at the end of the day, the only ones that make any money were the brokers.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's
why this, that's so interesting to me. I think it's because when I think of penny stocks, small, very low price stocks, and you think of like, what do you want to have happen? That's what you want to have happen. Like, it's like, oh, I bought this stock at 13 cents and it went up to whatever you said, $1.10. This is amazing. Like, this is, I'm the greatest investor in the world.
Right.
And, right. And so to like live that experience that everybody wants, as opposed to, let's say, buying it at 13 cents and it just sits there at 13 cents and you're like, all right, what do I do now?
Right.
Is this thing like ever, I guess I'm going to own it for 10 years. I just find that to be so interesting that you went on the ride everybody wants. And instead of holding on and being like, yeah, this is what I wanted, you took it as a negative sign.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure what would happen if we just stayed with it. I mean, ultimately, I'm sure, because the company lost out to better technology. So,
well, it's gone. To me, it's such higher level thinking, because somebody who's going like, yeah, that means the stock is worth that much, right? Like, that's what most people think. Oh, finally, that's the market's recognizing, right, just like I did, that it's worth $1.50 or whatever number. But instead you saw like, oh no, this is a huge sign that I am the market and nobody else is, like, this is not liquid enough for me to have security.
Yep. So some of the major things I would say you should watch out for is, you know, the obvious stuff, which is you're going to get less public disclosure from a penny stock company because they don't have to. You're going to get it manipulated. It's easily manipulated. So if you see the stock price starting to fire off, I'd be very, very careful. These are already high risk companies. And if you want to avoid a scam, you've really got to understand the management team of this company.
Well, and we need to get into those things, because how we got started talking about this was maybe penny stocks are a great idea for long-term investors.
Right on. They can be.
And
they can make a lot of money for a short-term investor too.
Well, and it could be a great way to find a great company that could be a 100-bagger, like, could be a huge 100-fold return.
Yeah. So maybe next time we could talk about how you should decide whether you could actually
be a good person
to do this kind of stuff. What would you need to, you know, what kind of skill set would you need to have?
Yeah. And then
people
think,
do make money in this stuff.
It sounds like watching Wolf of Wall Street is a key component to this.
I think it'd absolutely be a wonderful assignment.
Maybe I'll actually click on it.
Should do that.
Until next time.
Until then. Go watch Wolf of Wall Street.
Exactly. Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Bye, guys. Hi, guys. Thanks for listening to Invested. If you enjoyed this episode and you want more information or to listen to additional episodes, visit our website at investedpodcast.com and sign up for my virtual workshop right there. Spots are definitely limited for this event. I'm not kidding. They really are. They sell out very quickly. So everything discussed on this podcast, by the way, is either my opinion or it's Danielle's opinion. And it's really important, it's not to be taken as investing advice, because I am not your financial advisor, nor have I considered your personal situation as your fiduciary. So remember that. You're on your own here. This podcast is for your entertainment and education only, and I really hope you enjoyed it.